This is Fundraising Radio, a podcast about fundraising for early stage startups where we interview full-time investors and successful founders. But today we have something special for you. This is a four-episode series where we'll be talking to senior-level employees at companies like Google and Facebook and ask them about their views of the startup ecosystem. There's a growing number of active operators who invest in startups as individual angels or through operator investor collectives, and they have very different way of working with founders than traditional VCs. So how can you bring them on board as advisors? How to interest them in investing in your startup? What value do they bring? These and other questions will be answered in this new series. And if you like this episode and want to hear more content like this, please make sure to reach out to us through our official website, fundraisingradio.com. So let's jump into the episode. Today's guest speaker, we have Simon Yon, Senior Manager of Capacity Engineering and Analytics at Facebook. So let's kick it off by you giving us some background on yourself and on your position at Facebook.
Sure. My name is Simon Yon. At Facebook, I'm the manager supporting some of our capacity, our infrastructure capacity planning programs. Prior to this, I've worked at Box, Twitter, and some other companies, mostly around this same type of infrastructure optimization, infrastructure efficiency space in engineering.
Nice. A lot of very smart words that I don't really understand, but let's jump straight into the topic that I should understand and talk a little bit about how you interact with the startup world while working at Facebook. So first question is, how frequently do you get invitations to join the company in terms of co-founder, advisor, just sitting on board, or as an angel investor?
Yeah. I would say every once in a while, you know, it's certainly not as often as, you know, once a month or anything like that, maybe a couple times a year. And it kind of runs that range. You know, sometimes it's, you know, advice or something like that. I think very rarely have I had anyone directly just ask me to invest. So I would say that's probably a little more rare.
All right. This is just shocking content for me. To be honest, I thought it's more like on a weekly basis. Both of those things happen on a weekly basis, but apparently not. So can you tell us about those situations when you actually do get asked to directly invest or to, you know, give some advice, give some support like that? How does it usually happen? Do people just reach out to you on LinkedIn, or do they ping you on email, or do they try to find a warm introduction to you?
Yeah. It's a good question. And, you know, I definitely would say, you know, I don't know how much of this is just my personal experience. So maybe it happens a lot to other people. For me, it usually starts with kind of advice. You know, it's usually on LinkedIn. You know, it'll be something like, hey, we're doing something like your background seems to be pretty relevant to this. Do you have some time to chat? And you know, sometimes it ends up being a sales call, but I think most people don't do that. Because I think that's probably not a great way to start a sales call. But you know, usually, you know, they want to talk about something with me, they want to show me something, and they want to either demo it to me or they want to talk about how it might fit in with kind of what I do for my job or my company.
Nice.
Usually advice based.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And do you usually take your time to do those calls with those founders?
I usually take some time to do it. You know, I really believe in kind of, you know, helping people out, paying it forward. And I also learn a lot from these things. And it's always interesting to get some perspective in the industry on kind of what's going on and what people are thinking about. So, yeah, I'll usually take time to do that unless it's sounding like a sales call.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're taking time to participate on the podcast. So I appreciate that. And founders should appreciate that too. So speaking of appreciation, my personal advice is always to reach out to people like yourself, to potential advisors, when you're just reaching out to someone knowledgeable in the field asking for advice, is to offer something back. Has that ever happened to you? So that, like, someone's reaching out to you asking for your advice and in return offering XYZ. Has that happened?
You know, that'd be cool if people did that, I guess, but not usually. There's not really any mention of that. You know, every once in a while, people will say like, oh, you know, potentially it's like a maybe like some sort of paid advisory position or something like that. But I would say it's pretty rare. And I think, to be honest, for me, like, it wouldn't really necessarily be that compelling. It's more about like, hey, is this something interesting that I'd like to learn about? And if they're seem like a nice person, and then I'd probably just be inclined to just help them out. And yeah, like I said before, it helps me learn too, so.
Right, that's true. Those calls do help sometimes. That's very accurate. So, what about your colleagues? So, have you heard stories of someone on your team being like heavily involved in the startup world, being like advisor for 20 companies, or it's not really common?
Yeah, I would say it's not uncommon, I think, to be advising some companies. I would say, at least as far as I know, like something like 20 would be a lot. I don't know of anyone who's employed
Yeah,
that many.
that was an exaggeration.
Okay, yeah, but a few here and there, I think it's pretty common. I also think, it's fairly common for people to be invested, to invest a little in some companies here and there as well. So I think, yeah, I would say that's probably fairly common.
Right. Nice. Got it. So, let's talk about your specialty. So you are in the management position, and let's see how that can be applied to the startup world. So, first question is going to be about startup founders being usually the first time manager of their own company, of their own team. So, looking at those startups, talking to those startup founders, what do you see? What major mistakes do you see them making?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one thing that I see that's seems to work well is when people try to learn about management and treat it as like a skill, just like a technical skill, and kind of recognizing that maybe if they haven't done it before, that it's something that they should work on, and that there's real benefits, and it's like a real skill that requires real studying and real practice. And I think there can be a lot of benefits to doing that. So I would say, my biggest piece of advice for that is, just read up on it. There's a ton of management books, and try to find some good mentors, because I really think, making that jump from, very skilled kind of engineer or individual contributor, to leading a team, and especially, as a startup founder where it could be a very cross-functional team, it's actually kind of a hard thing to do well. And if it's your first time, where you're getting things done through a team rather than your own kind of personal effort, it can be a bit of an adjustment, to really kind of get the best out of people and get people really invested in your company, because really their success will be your success.
Right, that's very true. Any particular books you would recommend?
There's a really good one that I like called The Manager's Path. I think that's a pretty good one. And another one that I personally really like is called Drive. It's about kind of what really motivates people, kind of science of motivation. And I think that really underlies a lot of kind of other good kind of management principles.
Perfect. I'll make sure to leave links to both of those books in the description of this episode. So if someone listening to this is about to become first-time manager, definitely take a look at it. From my experience, books are the best place probably to learn, for me especially, even better than advice. But it's just because I when I talk to a person, it doesn't seem to be like the person doesn't seem to be as knowledgeable as the book. Probably I'm wrong there, but it's just how it works.
There's usually a reason why they wrote a book about it.
So how about startup founders who are trying to hire someone from a big company like Google, Facebook, Amazon, you call it? So those startup founders, they're trying to hire someone as a co-founder or bring on the team as a co-founder, someone from those big companies. Have you seen that happening? How did it work out?
I've definitely seen it happen. I think it's probably pretty tough. I think, my advice there would be, just kind of do your homework, and think about, what would be compelling, in terms of a value proposition to have that person join your company. In most cases, it's going to be a very significant compensation hit, and it's probably be a significant risk to them, right? Because your company could go any direction. Whereas if they're at one of these companies, it's probably pretty comfortable. So, but that being said, the flip side is, a lot of these companies, people might have been there for a long time. They might be looking for a new challenge. So I think a startup, especially if it's a fairly senior role, I think where you can really appeal to folks like that is giving them a lot of autonomy, a very interesting problem, basically a large leadership role. Something like that can be compelling, you know, because the flip side is, you know, if you've been working at one of these companies for a long time, money may not be your primary motivator anymore, as long as it's, you know, okay. And some of these other things might start to be a lot more important.
Right, that's true. So by the way, here is a topic that I would love to discuss because I think I read about it on a subreddit for founders, where a founder said that, you know, he launched multiple companies in the past and one of the most recent ones went bankrupt and he realized that he didn't have any money to bootstrap his next one. And he started to look for an actual job and he realized that he didn't actually have like one particular really good skill. He knew everything about everything, but nothing about one thing. So have you seen that happening? How would you recommend them dealing with this stuff?
Yeah. You know, I can say just as a hiring manager, like I've definitely seen candidates like that, where, you know, they're not a hyper specialist in one thing. And especially if they've, you know, had a lot of startup experience and been founder or co-founder at a lot of places. What I would say to that is, you know, having that broad range of skills is itself a skill. And, you know, it's about finding the right fit, the role and a company that values having that broad range of experience. So I would recommend, you know, some areas that could be a good fit might be things like product management could be a good one, or maybe technical program management. These are some areas where I've worked with some people who have been kind of like the serial founder.
Nice, that's actually pretty encouraging. I like that advice. So you earlier you mentioned that, you know, one of the appealing one of the ways to appeal to those senior managers at big companies is offering them new challenge and you know, autonomy and all that stuff. But have you seen a lot of situations where people from Facebook or other companies have actually quit their jobs, those big companies with great salaries, and join startups where that's not really common?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's not common, but I also wouldn't say it's like super rare either. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of, okay, if I were a founder, what would I do? I might actually look for people who have actually, you know, maybe you could look on LinkedIn or something, of look for people who have been there a long time. Because I think one way to look at it is, you might think, oh, they've been there for a long time, they're really comfortable, like they're not going to leave. But the other way you could look at it is, hey, if they've been there for a long time, maybe they're really ready for a new challenge. So I would probably focus on those folks rather than someone who's only been there for a short tenure.
Right. That's, I think I agree with your point of view, because I think in 21st century, working at one place for like longer than, I don't know, 5-7 years, that's already too much. So
yeah.
Very, very good point here. Very accurate point. So let's go back to the very beginning of our conversation where we discussed about people offering you to invest in their startups. So how do those things usually go? So let's say a startup founder reaches out to you, says, you know, I see that you're working at Facebook on this position, so I think that my solution might appeal to you. Would you like to invest? Is that about how it works?
I have not experienced that, but, you know, I don't know if that's if other people do. I can tell you maybe one specific story that led to me making an investment in a company.
Go for it.
So the way it started out was their product was basically kind of a platform to connect kind of more senior engineering leaders with maybe more like new managers, folks looking for kind of that type of mentorship. And that's how they initially reached out to me. You know, they described the product to me. They described why they thought I'd be a good fit. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. And kind of, I guess, maybe to your point about what do I get out of it? You know, that the return on it was kind of obvious is, you know, I get exposure to different companies and how they operate and different people's problems, which makes me a better manager. So I think that one was a pretty good kind of mutual benefit type of situation. So and they never asked me for money or anything like that. It was just, hey, just, you know, contribute your time, please. And that was pretty easy to do. They didn't ask for too much right off the bat. And then as I worked more with them, it was just kind of organic for me to get more involved. You know, they had me participate in some of their conferences and things like that. And I think it just kind of naturally evolved that way. And you know, towards the end, when they were trying to raise more money, it was pretty natural for me to want to participate, because at that point I was already kind of invested in the company's success. I liked all the people, I liked their mission, I really understood it, and I was bought in at that point. So I think then for me, the investment was really a consequence of what happened before, and not something that, you know, was pitched to me right off the bat.
Right, yeah, I think angel investors very rarely do this stuff. So that sounds very natural, very organic. So nice work, those founders who did this. By the way, those founders who reached out to you initially, did they offer some sort of compensation, maybe in forms of shares of the company in return for your time, or was it just, you know, you're officially our advisor, your compensation is being an advisor in our company?
Yeah, for this was more just as a participant. I guess this was a little bit unique because their product was management mentorship, engineering management mentorship specifically. So it was kind of like, yeah, they wanted some advice on their product, but it was also for me as a participant. So in this case, it wasn't like that. But there is another example of a company that approached me in the past to be an advisor, and it was more how you described. It was kind of upfront, like, hey, here's our product, here's where we are, here's where we think you can help us, and you know, let's have a chat, make sure it's a good fit. And then upfront, there is, you know, hey, here's how much time and commitment we're looking for you. Here's exactly what we would like for your help with. Here's how, you know, kind of the expectation. And you know, we'll compensate you in this way for it. Is that something you want to do? So that was probably a more straightforward approach. And you know, that's fine for me. That was fine for me too.
Got it. All right. So back to the investing, because it's fundraising radio. Everything here is circle around fundraising for startups. So I know that some big companies, so I know that pretty much I think every single big company that I know of, they do have something like an angel groups made of their employees that invest individually, and sometimes they even create a pool of money that invests as an actual fund. So do you, first of all, you do have that at Facebook, right? I'm not confusing.
You know, I'm sure it's there. You know, I'm also pretty new at Facebook, so I probably couldn't speak to that. But yeah, I'm sure it's there. It exists. And I think probably a lot of companies have it. Generally, what I've seen is, you know, a lot of these groups, it's like kind of, you know, people who, you know, maybe were there pre-IPO and, you know, are fairly senior and have like a lot of money. So I think, you know, that's some of the groups I've seen. So, you know, maybe I'm just not rich enough to be in one of these groups.
All right. Once you'll get there, I'll circle back with you.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
All right, perfect. So yeah, just to summarize the whole thing. So you think in general, people at those big companies, they are pretty interested in startup worlds, but not like actively looking for opportunities there, right?
Yeah, I would say that's probably generally true. You know, I think people do look at kind of smaller companies because I think, you know, at a certain I think that's always kind of a little bit of a crossroads. It's like, hey, do I stay, you know, at this big company with all of the benefits of that? Do I jump to a smaller company where I can take on more responsibility, generally in a more senior role? And try to build something new, and with all the kind of, you know, downside would be, you know, the risk, the lower upfront pay, right, all that kind of stuff. Or do I kind of stick around doing what I was doing? So I think, you know, especially if you've been somewhere for a while, there people are probably more interested in you than it might seem they would be. It just depends on the person, right? Some people are more risk averse than others. Another tip I could have is, you know, if you're trying to recruit folks like this, is, you know, look at their resume, look at their LinkedIn. If they've kind of been in, you know, one level for a long time, right? If they've been a manager for, you know, 5 years, if they've been a senior manager for 7 years or something like that, you know, at those levels, taking that next step in seniority, there has to be a reason to have it at the company, right? Like, you don't just get promoted to be a director because you've done well, right? There has to be an opening. And if someone is there, you know, most people, if they made it that level, they generally want to go to the next level. And if that opportunity doesn't exist at that company, if you come in and you're like, hey, like, run engineering for me, that would be probably something that might be compelling.
Right. That is very accurate from my perspective, who does not work at Facebook, but who did talk to a few people there. So that does seem to be very accurate, really on point. So here on this point, we're moving on to the most likely the last question of today's episode. I think it's going to be the last question of today's episode, but we'll see. So question is, it's going to be the call to action. So Simon, what is the one thing that you want the listener to do as soon as the episode is over?
I would say just, you know, look up some profiles, figure out what you want to accomplish. You know, do you want advice from someone? Do you want to get money? Do you want to hire someone? And just take the first step, you know, just send some messages, reach out to people. And my big piece of advice there is, you know, don't be shy to reach out, but, you know, try to keep it more conversational in the beginning and don't immediately ask them for money would be my advice.
Right. That's very accurate advice. And that is part of the problem that founders do have. I get like, I don't know, 4 or 5 messages every single day on LinkedIn saying like, hey, here's our company. I see that you're working at a fund. When I check out our pitch deck, I'm like, dude, come on. at least, like, you know, give me some time. But yeah, that is very accurate. Founders do feel like those shortcuts exist. Those shortcuts do not exist. So good advice.
Great way to put it.
And while I was talking about that, I remembered about the question that I wanted to ask you. So for those startup founders who are listening to this podcast, who are listening to this particular episode, which one of them should reach out to you asking for advice for investment? So basically, rephrase my question, who should reach out to you for help?
You know, if you're anywhere in kind of the infrastructure optimization or capacity or performance space, you know, always fun to chat with folks working on that stuff. If you're interested in any kind of general management advice or anything like that, you know, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to help.
Perfect. I've put it in my notes. So in case if I run into someone like that, I'll make sure to send them your way. Perfect. On this note, we'll wrap it up. I'll make sure to leave all the links that Simon mentioned in the description of this episode. And all those links are going to be links to 2 books specifically. I don't think I have to leave a link to Facebook in the description of this episode because over half of the population of the planet do have Facebook already. So yeah, we'll just stick to this, to those 2 books and of course LinkedIn of Simon. So if you want to talk to him directly, definitely pin him right there. And yeah, that's gonna be my call to action. Check out the description of this episode, useful books, and a link to Simon's LinkedIn. And as usually, have a good